In Iraq, the war against ISIS is in its final phase. After months of investigation and undercover reporting, this film reveals the side of the war you don't see. Out of sight, the Shia militia fighting on the side of America and the West are driving thousands of Sunni civilians from their homes.
I'm looking through the gates now, and it's just a mound of rubble.
In hidden prisons, the militia are killing and torturing Sunnis at will.
So some of the bodies are being dumped in the river right here.
They have presence in the parliament, they have presence in the government. When you have a militia, it intimidates people.
They're growing in power, infiltrating the Iraqi government.
Are you worried that Sunnis may turn to violence to fight back?
Blood has been spilled. There will be a civil war.
What's happening matters to the whole world, because the victory being won may breed a new ISIS and new terror for the future.
ISIS and the battle for Iraq. Hashtag the battle for Iraq.
You can see how close we are to ISIS now. On both sides of the road, you can see black smoke billowing out, and that's from oil wells that ISIS have set on fire.
Ramita Navai.
A Shia militia unit has advanced into ISIS territory.
They drive into a small camp dotted with armored vehicles and a low defensive wall topped with sandbags and carpets.
Hey. How far are they?
400 meters away.
They're pointing over there and they're saying, that's the black flag of ISIS. And there it is.
The fighters, like 60% of Iraqis, are Shia Muslims. Their ISIS enemies follow their own violent version of Sunni Islam, which dictates Shia Muslims should be killed. Religious hatred fuels this conflict.
Barbed wire across no man's land.
How many men have you lost here?
We've lost 420 men in this area just in the last 4 months. Mortars, snipers, and suicide bombs. Just continuous fighting.
There are over 40 Shia militia groups with up to 100,000 fighters. These men are in the Badr organization, which has received arms from Iraq's Shia neighbor, Iran. Abu Sajjad, the post commander, says ISIS attacked a few days earlier.
The enemy sent 3 car bombs which exploded behind the barricade, killing 3 of our guys and wounding 8.
The bodies of ISIS fighters lie rotting between the lines. Refugees have been spotted in no man's land.
Ramita is in the back of a 4x4.
The road is pockmarked with craters from IEDs that ISIS fighters plant every night.
An armed man is sitting casually on the back of a pickup.
Families right ahead of us, a few dozen people. They've been walking all night to get here.
The vehicles come to a stop, and Ramita gets out to meet the refugees.
Salaam.
Salaam alaikum.
The refugees are Sunnis from the ISIS-held town of Hawija.
How are you feeling? How was your journey?
It was very hard. It was such a struggle. It's a miracle we made it. The family group, mostly consisting of young children, are helped into the back of the pickup.
The guys here say that we may be monitored by ISIS right now. Fighters often shoot across, so we're leaving.
The militiamen wave goodbye. In the back of the pickup, a woman pulls her scarf across her mouth and holds her hands over her ears, while another is slumped over with her hand held to her forehead. An older woman. Life is so tough. We're living on nothing but bread. Two pickups loaded with refugees stop at a base, and their dazed passengers are unloaded. Ramita has joined them.
How did you escape?
We drove towards the mountains. All we wanted to do was escape. They were following us. If they had caught us, they would have killed us. We were starving. We were prisoners for 3 years.
They've escaped ISIS, but now they face a new ordeal. The militia separate the men from their families. In this part of Iraq, most people are Sunni Muslims, and to the Shia militia, every Sunni refugee is an ISIS suspect.
As a bearded commander goes through a stack of identity cards, some of the refugee men are sitting cross-legged in a group under the blazing sun.
What are the chances that you've got some ISIS fighters in that room?
There's a 90% chance we'll find ISIS.
But it's such a hard process to really tell if somebody's an ordinary guy or if he's an ISIS fighter. How can you be 100% sure?
We have a database of all ISIS members. Displaced families also give us information about who is with ISIS. A man is loudly protesting as he's forcefully moved away, then made to put his arms behind his back.
So the guys just pulled this man away. They're telling me now that families here have said that he tried to blackmail them, that when they were fleeing, he said, if you don't pay me, if you don't give me money, I'm going to go and tell ISIS that you're fleeing and they'll kill you.
The man is taken away by a fighter wearing a balaclava. When Ramita and her crew make to follow, someone blocks them, saying, where are you going? What are you filming?
Suddenly got quite chaotic here. They're accusing him of being an ISIS fighter. We weren't allowed to follow him. We don't know where they've taken him.
A rapidly departing vehicle.
The militia are meant to answer to Iraq's government, which is backed by an American-led coalition that includes Britain. But the Shia militia are powerful. When they take prisoners, they often play by their own rules.
Amateur footage of a long line of men walking single file with one hand on the shoulder of the person in front. Someone says, who said we shouldn't take revenge? An eye for an eye.
This footage, which we've had verified, was taken by Shia militiamen during a recent battle to force ISIS from Anbar province. The prisoners are Sunnis and their guards are Shia militiamen.
Move. Put your hands on the man in front. You, in the white robe.
The fate of the prisoners is unknown. But human rights groups have documented a consistent pattern of Shia militia executing Sunni civilians. In June 2016, the Shia militia helped drive ISIS from Sakhla Weir, 45 miles from Baghdad. The Shia militia posted video of the battle and the town's Sunni residents celebrating liberation.
Children waving and cheering.
What they don't show is the militia rounded up 600 Sunni men and boys who have never been seen again.
A bomb-damaged building on the verge of collapse.
Sakhla Weir is in Anbar province, where hundreds of thousands of Sunnis have lost their homes. Over 3 million Iraqis are now refugees in their own country.
Hundreds of tents behind fences.
The Amriat al-Fallujah refugee camp is where the women of Sakhla Weir have fled.
Children playing in the dust. Then an elderly woman in tears.
So
They separated us from the men and took the men away. We asked them, where are our men? They said they would give them back soon. And now it's been 4 months.
What do you think has happened to the men?
I don't know. We keep asking and we don't get any answers. I have 11 people missing from Sakhalin. My sons, brothers, husband, brother-in-law and uncle. I just want them to tell me if they're dead or alive. Why did they take them? It's been 4 months since I saw my boys. What have we done to deserve this? The woman wipes tears from her eyes.
The women are saying that all these children here are missing their fathers.
As well as the men who disappeared, Shia militia imprisoned another 600 Sunni men. Some were later released. We found one of them hiding among the women.
At sunset, they took us to a house. We were handcuffed. A room with narrow window slits. They hit us with iron bars. They hit us on the head. Some people were killed. Hazy lights.
Human rights groups have documented that 49 of them died. Survivors say the torturers wore the badge of an Iranian-backed Shia militia called Kataib Hezbollah, the Hezbollah Brigades.
We thought they were going to shoot us. We saw the killing and the torture. They beat us with rifle butts. We were so desperate, we told them to kill us. A metal grid at a window.
Has this changed the way you feel about your country?
The militia came and took everything. We're just peaceful farmers. We don't have anything. We've become victims and the government does nothing. A girl fills a jug from a large water container.
Walking through this camp, dozens of people keep coming up to us, telling us they have loved ones missing. On top of that, people are still going missing. Only a few days ago, a handful of families tried to go back to Sakhalin, and some of the men were taken by militias.
Little boys playing football at the edge of a pile of rubbish.
The accusations against the Hezbollah brigades don't end with Sakhalin.
We're going to meet a Sunni MP from Anbar who's been investigating the case of hundreds of Sunni men who disappeared at a checkpoint manned by Kataib Hezbollah. Now, he's one of only a few people who's been speaking out openly against the militias, and for that, he's been receiving regular death threats.
Ahmad Salmani collects videos that militiamen share on social media. He says this is from the checkpoint he's investigating.
Oh, God.
A Shia militiaman is cutting off the ear of a prisoner.
That was horrific. That was Rezaza checkpoint. This is where the men are going missing.
Witnesses have confirmed that this is Rezaza checkpoint. ISIS and the militia are two sides of the same coin. Ahmad wipes a tear from his eye. Now he sits down with Ramita.
Relatives have given him the names of over 2,000 men who have disappeared from Rezaza checkpoint. He has insider contacts who say those still alive are in a network of secret militia prisons.
These militia prisons are outside Iraqi government control. It's terrifying.
Does the government know this is happening?
I spoke to the defense minister myself. He said the militia is now more powerful than the government, and there's nothing we can do.
So just to be clear, the defence minister of this country has no power over Kataib militia taking thousands of men and imprisoning them and torturing them.
Absolutely. The Iraqi government is now run by the militia.
The government has failed to launch any investigation. Only 65 of the people abducted from the checkpoint have been seen again. They were taken to a prison run by the Hezbollah brigades in Jurf al-Sakhar.
One of the men released from Jurf al-Sakhar has finally agreed to talk to us, but only on condition of anonymity. When he was released, the militia's parting words to him was that if he spoke about his experience, they'd hunt him down and kill him.
The man seen in silhouette sitting opposite Remita. They stripped us to our underwear and said, "We will kill you." So we prepared ourselves for death.
Instead of execution, the torture started.
Prisoners being beaten.
We've obtained this footage, validated by independent experts, that shows men in Shia militia uniform applying the same torture methods he experienced.
They would beat us with iron bars and electric cables. A man being whipped. We would be beaten from 4 p.m. until 3 a.m. There was a sign in the prison saying, "Your confession is your life, your silence is your death." A man wedged in a corner is attacked unrelentingly. When they beat someone brutally, he would reach the point of death. Then he would confess rather than die. 52 people died of torture while I was imprisoned there. A rusting iron bar.
Another survivor from the prison says the Shia militia are creating a new generation of enemies.
Are you worried that Sunnis may turn to violence to fight back?
For sure this is going to happen. After ISIS there will be a civil war, because blood has been spilled. A mosque in silhouette.
Iraq's vice president and former prime minister is Shia. Ayad Alawi is concerned that many of his colleagues in a government dominated by Shias are either members of the militia or have close connections with them.
There are a lot of people who are involved. They have presence in the parliament, they have presence in the government. And by and large, any place in the world, when you have a militia, it intimidates people.
Does the government know about the secret prisons run by the Shia militias?
Definitely, but they don't want to confront these secret prisons because they are held and controlled by strong groups, what you call militias.
Like Jurf al-Sakhar prison?
For example.
Over 2,000 men and boys who were taken at Razaza checkpoint?
Yes. So nobody knows why they are remaining in prison.
Is it because the militias have
power? Yeah, they don't want, because powerful people are involved and there is a cover-up. So they don't want realities to be divulged. That's why we feel, and I feel, and many people also, by the way, in the government, feel that they are powerless to do anything.
And the Shia militia are now taking control of huge swathes of Iraq, creating a country of lawlessness and fear.
We've stopped on the side of the road to meet the militiaman who's going to take us around. He said that we need to get into his car, and that's the only safe way that we can get through checkpoints here.
Buildings reduced to rubble. Remita is being driven along a road flanked by abandoned and damaged vehicles.
Mosul is the last ISIS stronghold in Iraq. The Iraqi army, helped by American airstrikes, is trying to take back this mostly Sunni city of a million people. For the moment, the Shia militia are holding back. I want to reach their positions outside the city.
Are you filming? So we're just on the road to Mosul and everyone's been stopped here and you heard that big bang. We think it's an IED that's just been exploded. We're trying to find out more. There was a guy with a knife digging in. We think he was trying to clear another one.
This Sunni neighborhood is 2 miles behind the front line. ISIS claim to follow Sunni Islam, but Sunnis bear the brunt of their attacks. The next day, 3 bombs destroyed this market.
Local men standing around at the edge of the market, then an armored vehicle making its way along a road. Buildings in ruins and a fire burning in an oil drum.
A handful of clinics treat civilians. This one is run by a European charity. Max Hendrik Gelink is one of the nurses.
Today, the most critically injured in here.
And how many patients are you getting a day?
We are getting about 40 to 60 patients each day.
A patient with a drip is helped to a van.
Many of them are critically injured, but there are no functioning hospitals with surgical capabilities. Many of the people we send, we kind of know that they are not going to make it, but we try to stabilize them as best as possible.
Max's breath was misting in the cold air.
The Shia militia fighters we've arranged to meet are from the Badr organization.
A map of Iraq.
They're cutting off ISIS escape routes west of the city.
A pulsing spot labelled Tal Abtar. A man has just woken up.
It's 7 a.m. The unit is about to advance to Tal Abtar, which the militia has just taken from ISIS. Commander Saadi Kudum is watching the morning news. For him, this is a fight against terrorism.
A man on the news. I've lost 2 people. One of them was executed in front of me by ISIS bastards.
You have to be angry.
Saadi Kudum. You have to be angry when you see that. They destroyed everything. Destroyed the lives, the human beings, the people.
We just need
you to take the truth with you to the world to see. We just want the country to be safe.
We want
to make a good future. Not for us. Maybe we will all die. But for the children that come behind us.
The Americans are attacking ISIS with airstrikes in Mosul, but have demanded the Shia militia stay out of the city. They know their reputation, and that some of the militia are backed by Iran.
The guys are now moving on from this town. You can see that it's completely deserted. Everybody here fled when the militia advanced. And they're now going to the next town. This is what they do. Every few days, they advance and they take territory from ISIS. And what they leave behind, lots of graffiti on walls. And now there's a Shia flag flying from the Sunni mosque here.
On the road, the driver tunes the radio. They pass vast expanses of desert, then a fallen pylon painted white and rusty orange. When we get close to Mosul, we start to hear this from ISIS.
The guys are actually listening to ISIS radio. They love to listen to it because it gives them motivation of what drives them.
They're weak now. They're finished. They're calling people to fight, saying, Sunnis, you are our brothers. Passing abandoned buildings and stalls.
The unit reaches Tal Abta. ISIS have built tunnels under the streets. The militia are still clearing them. Suddenly, we're told to stop filming.
Why do we have to put the camera down?
It's the Hezbollah brigades. They don't want journalists here.
This neighborhood is controlled by the Hezbollah brigades, the militia accused of the Rezaza and Saklawir disappearances. The men are nervous.
What happens when you go in their territory?
It's not allowed. They keep their operations secret. Someone gets out of the car.
Eventually, Commander Kadoum and his Badr fighters get to where they're meant to be.
What was that shooting?
Here it's good, but maybe you go to there, it's not safe.
Kadoum and his men are securing Tal Abta's hospital.
Inside, the hospital is strewn with debris. An abandoned examination chair and an operation theatre light with one of its bulbs blown.
They have orders to search for the names of Sunnis who might be ISIS collaborators.
Kadoum, this is a list of doctors who worked for them. Offices abandoned in a hurry. They were acting like it was a country, an ISIS country, like it no longer belonged to Iraq. It was their state. A man points to a display on a wall. These posters are on every wall. The punishment for drinking alcohol, the stealing, adultery, homosexuality.
This picture for cutting the hand of someone.
A huge blade on someone's wrist.
And they're now taking me to an ISIS tunnel. And ISIS have built all this network of tunnels in this area, and this is how they operated. This is how they fought these guys. They'd pop out of these tunnels. God, it's big. It's a sophisticated tunnel.
Outside, fighters from another militia group have arrived. The Sayed Shuhada brigades are powerful, with a representative in parliament. They fought against the Americans during the occupation, and today their main ally is Iran. Their leader is Abu Ala Wa'eli.
Could you have fought this war against ISIS without Iran's help?
Iraq wouldn't have reached this stage without the support of Iran and their military advisors on the ground.
And what support has your group received directly from Iran?
Weapons, advisors, military plans, even financial support.
This Shia militia group also has men in neighboring Syria fighting for President Assad, who is backed by Iran.
I'm a commander in Syria. I have fighters inside Syria. We've been fighting in Syria for 5 years.
It's rare for militia leaders to openly acknowledge Iran's influence.
Ramita is back on the road.
Tal Abta Sunni inhabitants are sheltering outside the town.
A man wearing a black and white headscarf. I want to thank the militia for welcoming us and respecting us. I just want to say that to the media.
But when I speak off camera to a militiaman in Persian, he reveals the militia have imprisoned many of the Sunni men from the town.
Where are these prisons? Everywhere. Why don't they hand prisoners to the state? Because the state releases them. Do you think these people are scared of the militia? They're very scared. All of Iraq is scared. A collapsed building.
He tells me there are many Iranian fighters here, 4 in his unit alone.
Why do they come? Every day, the militia pays them $15. Then it's $75 for the second line of defense, and $100 for the front liner. Food is doled out to the fighters. A palm tree, then young boys herding sheep.
The militia don't just abuse Sunnis in the aftermath of fighting. There's evidence Sunnis are being intimidated and driven out of areas that are meant to be at peace and under government control. The Shia militia drove ISIS from Diyala province in 2014. But it's a place many Sunnis speak of with fear.
Access to Diyala is tightly controlled. The province is pretty much run by the militias. There are checkpoints everywhere. So the only way to get in and find out what's really happening is to go in undercover.
The sun glowing in a golden sky.
I posed as an Iraqi visiting family. Last year, two Iraqi journalists investigating the militia in Diyala were murdered near our destination, Muqtadir.
A variety of flags on poles lining the roadside.
Even in villages, there are checkpoints. This is the second one that we've come to in this village. We've got to put the phone down now.
Tiny buildings and a market stall.
We've arranged to secretly meet an insider willing to expose what's happening in the province. He's a Shia militiaman with the Badr organization.
We've stopped on the side of the road. He said that we need to get into his car. You can see it in front. It's unmarked. He says it's known to all the militiamen in this area, and that's the only safe way that we can get through checkpoints here.
Ramita gets into her informant's car.
This is the heart of militia power in Diyala.
Buildings in ruins.
The signs of the battle that drove out ISIS are everywhere.
The scant remains of homes reduced to rubble.
But the militiaman is shocked by what his comrades are now doing. As we film undercover, he shows us how the militia have taken revenge on the entire Sunni population for ISIS suicide bombings.
So on my left here is a Sunni mosque that you can see it's been completely destroyed.
The informant. People don't dare to look at this mosque. They don't want to be accused of anything. Passing shops and narrow alleys.
I'm looking through the gates now and it's just a mound of rubble.
A religious leader even handed out lighters to the militiaman's unit to burn Sunni homes.
I asked him why he was handing out lighters. He said, if you don't burn houses, it's not a real jihad.
The fighter says the militia act with impunity, kidnapping Sunnis to make money and drive them out.
This is a place of gangs, militia, and murderers. I can't accept the horrible things the militia has done.
Different militia groups have carved up the town. They've even started fighting for territory between themselves.
We've just had to turn around because the militiamen said that that area is too dangerous to enter.
He's worried we've attracted attention and we have to move on.
Palm trees and still green water.
Outside Muqtadir, there's a spot on the Diyala River where kidnappers dispose of their victims.
So some of the bodies are being dumped in the river. We've just stopped. They say it's safe for us to check this bit out. We'll be hidden by the grass that's growing on the side.
A fishing boat tied to the bank. Ramita peers over the handrail of a bridge.
Off camera, local people tell me the bodies are often thrown over this bridge.
Tall, dense grasses cling to the banks of the river. Now a dusty trail, then entering a thicket.
This footage was filmed by a fisherman.
A body face down in the river.
He discovered this body 3 months ago.
Ramita removes her shoes before entering a house.
A relative of the dead man is too scared to be identified. Witnesses told him what happened.
The cars had no number plates and tinted windows. These types of cars belong to the government.
How many people do you know who've been kidnapped or killed?
Many. Hundreds of people have been kidnapped and killed.
Kidnappers are holding another of his relatives, but the family have decided not to pay a ransom.
They kidnap Sunnis. They kill them and take their money as revenge. The man is holding a string of pale orange prayer beads in his hand. Palm trees still standing in amongst the devastation.
A senior member of the federal police in Diyala is willing to meet us, provided we hide his identity. He's a Shia who's appalled by what's happening to his Sunni neighbors. He says the kidnappings occur because the Badr militia has infiltrated the federal police.
In my area, the police are controlled by a low-ranking policeman. There's a high-ranking officer, but he's powerless. The junior policeman controls everything because he's with the Badr organization. He has the power to transfer a police officer if he's not happy with him.
So what have you seen as a policeman in Diyala?
Often we see militia cars drive through the city with kidnapped people inside.
So you're saying the police were involved in kidnapping and killing in Diyala?
Yes. There are policemen involved. On the road.
In many parts of Diyala, I saw signs that Sunnis are abandoning their homes.
Our guide's pointing out farms on the left-hand side here. He's saying they were run by Sunni families and they've all fled. They're completely abandoned now.
People from the area gave us footage they claim shows the Shia militia burning Sunni farms. Evidence, they say, of a campaign to expel Sunnis from places they've lived in for generations. In the Iraq that's emerging after ISIS, the country's demographics are being reshaped.
Night is falling.
Diyala province is controlled by the Shia militia. Since ISIS was defeated here, tens of thousands of Sunnis have fled.
A lake.
Many end up in desert camps on the edges of the province.
Ramita has joined a family in their tent.
The militia have warned Sheikh Suleiman Aliawi and his wife Amal never to return to their home village of Sensel.
A kettle is placed on a hob.
As the militia took their district from ISIS, they gathered all men under 70 for what they said was security vetting, including five of their sons. Amal went to the house where they'd been taken. Not only were five of her sons dead, so were over 50 others.
They shot him in the head and left him lying there. Footage of the bodies, with pools of blood streaming from their heads. Leave her. Leave her. Speak to me. She was there at the scene. She saw all the dead, and she is still in shock. Amal holds up a photo. These are the photos of the people they killed. This is Mubarak. Mubarak is the father of this child. And this is his brother, Ismail. A photo on a mobile phone. If we returned, all the people in this camp would be killed by the militia. It's a sectarian issue. They want to get rid of us all. A young boy and girl, then a youth riding a rickety bicycle.
The Badr organization, the same militia accused of kidnap and sectarian cleansing, was leading the fighting the day of the massacre. It denied involvement, but justified the killings, claiming that all the men murdered were ISIS members.
What's really striking is that even though ISIS is on the retreat across Iraq, these refugee camps are still full. People here tell us they're as scared of the militias as they are of ISIS, and they've been warned by the militias they can never return home.
The political advisor to the head of the Badr organization is Haytham Al-Mayahi.
Are you concerned that these abuses will cause a new Sunni insurgency?
Which abuses we are talking about? To kill an ISIS member or to torture an ISIS member, this is abuse to you? To me, it's not. This is the right way because he's a murderer. He has to be tortured and killed. We are a country who are facing car bombing every day, suicidal every day. If this happened in UK, would you wait for a trial?
I've spoken to a Badr organization member who told me he knows colleagues of his who kidnap and kill.
If you are very sure about that, that there are people who are kidnapping and killing and they are related to Badr, I assure you we can go together now. We'll take those people to justice because I am very sure we not allow any mistakes in Badr.
I have even spoken to a Shia member of the federal police in Diyala, and he says that the Badr organization members have infiltrated the federal police in Diyala, and he says that many times he has seen Badr organization members kidnap in front of his eyes. He's witnessed it. He's seen men bound and gagged in the back of cars.
I'm not quite sure what you're talking about because I visit Diyala many times, and when we are there, people actually welcome us with warm feeling.
Diyala is a glimpse of what all of Iraq may become once ISIS is defeated, a nation where Sunnis are oppressed. Iraq's Vice President Iyad Alawi fears this could ignite another Sunni insurgency. A new Daesh, as many Iraqis call ISIS.
I spoke to so many people from Diyala who are living in refugee camps now and have told me that their land has been bulldozed.
Yes.
And they've been warned by the Shia militias never to return.
Yes, that's true. If we don't limit the damage and work on re-establishing the trust, without this, really, believe me, things will go out of control.
We're hearing that the Sunnis now are talking of a new insurgency. Does this trouble you?
It's possible. It's possible. It's possible we will see even a worse Daesh in the future. More serious replacements will appear, and more dangerous, more cunning, and more destructive. And this would not only limit itself to this part of the world. It will travel and spill over into the whole globe.
People wandering through a refugee camp.
Mosul is the greatest test yet as to whether the Shia militia and the Shia-dominated government can treat Sunnis as equal citizens of Iraq. Near the front line, we come across a familiar scene.
A crying baby.
Sunni men are being separated from their families.
Get back. The men are crouching on the ground.
Some of them have been taken aside as ISIS suspects, and they're lined up against the wall or on the floor. But we've just been told we've stepped away because they haven't been checked for suicide vests or for weapons. And the whole atmosphere here is tense.
Ramita gets into an armored vehicle, part of a convoy.
For those still living in the liberated areas of the city, life has become a daily struggle.
As provisions are handed out, a woman says, "Please, give it to me. God bless you."
There are gangs of kids like this, and you can see they're cold and they're really hungry. And the conditions here are bad. It's freezing. They're desperate.
A group look like they're about to fight.
The battle to defeat ISIS has consumed Iraq. But there's little evidence anyone has a plan for what happens the day after ISIS is defeated. The consequences of that will affect us all.